Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
Well, this week, Donald and I, we actually were going to have a guest on the show, and we've postponed that guest due to some rescheduling that needed to be done on the part of our guest. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about a couple of things that have been taking place in our respective worlds since we last spoke together a couple of weeks ago in our last episode. So, Donald, why don't you start off by talking about what's been up with you?
We were thinking about, okay, well, if we don't have a guest, what topic are we going to do? And we're like, oh, let's do a grab bag. I'm always cool with that. But the only thing that's been really coming up with me that recently is the nature, the way science creates our perception of reality. And I know we've talked about reality before, and I know we've mentioned science before. One of the things that has just really caught my attention is the way people do math. What started this is there's a thing online that's been going around with the group in my Facebook friends where it's like 5 plus 5 plus 5 minus 5 plus 5 plus 5 times 0 or something like that. And then it says, I bet most people will get this wrong. Well, some of my friends have gone through that and came up with their answers, and I went through it and came up with my answer, and it was different than theirs. And I was just like, well, am I doing something wrong, or is there something they're missing? And then I remembered, oh, we have to follow the order of operations that tells you whether you do multiplication first, or you do division, or subtraction, or which one you do first. And that changes everything. What caught my attention is, well, who decided that you do multiplication first or division first? Why is that so important? Because to me, if you have some numbers and you say, well, we do multiplication first. Why? Because that's just the way we do it. Well, then that changes your whole perception of reality of what science is and can do, because then you're only coming out of that one direction, as opposed to if you did, say, addition or subtraction first and then multiplication. And I was just thinking about this, of how that one little thing in math can really change the whole perception of reality.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Some, yeah. A little bit. So keep going down this train of thought here.
Oh, that's a train of thought right there.
Oh, okay. I mean, was it just kind of a brain tickle, or did you actually explore it a little bit more?
Well, see, that's what I was mentioning earlier. It's just, I don't know if we could flush that out into a whole show, or if we're just going to leave it at that. I mean, to me, it's very monumental, because if you look at it, well, we decided, okay, in any mathematical thing, you do parentheses, anything in parentheses first, and then you do your exponents, and then you do your multiplication, and then you do your division, and then your addition and subtraction, and you do it in that order. Well, if you switch that order around, the science comes out different, because most science is based on math. And if you change the way math is done, then you change the way the result of the science, and if the result of the science comes out different, then reality of your world comes out differently. I look at it this way. You can have really cool things happen in science coming out of different ways by switching that order around. And we just so happen to have multiplication be one of the first things that we do, and look at all the stuff we've come up with. So I'm thinking, if you take that out of the mathematical realm and you move that into, say, a relationship realm, or a business or a sociological type realm, that could literally change the perception of these whole things that a lot of people consider, oh, this is just the way things are.
Well, I think you're saying something that a lot of people already embrace, which is you just change a small element and, you know, the whole butterfly flapping its wings in Brazil or whatever. I think, isn't that kind of the same idea?
No. See, that's cause and effect right there. That's more of butterfly flaps its wings in China, hurricane happens in the Gulf of Mexico. This is more of, you know, instead of doing math first, we do addition first, and instead, and what the result is, instead of having computers, we have telepathy.
Okay.
And instead of communicating through the World Wide Web, we have learned to communicate through mind-to-mind type thing, because the perception is so different, it changes the reality so much, the technology would be that much different. In other words, it's kind of like the whole time travel thing where you go back in time, you step on a fly, and all of a sudden it changes the whole future of everything, because instead of, I mean, we've talked about that before, and I think I can't remember the author, but it's The Sound of Thunder was the title of the name, or the title.
I think so. Yeah,
it's more along the lines of that, where if you follow a path down a certain way, then you're only going to see things a certain way. Whereas if you follow it down a different way, you're going to see things a different way. And with this whole math stuff, since our whole modern world is based on doing these mathematical calculations in this order, then if you switch that order around, what happens?
You think that if we changed whether we did multiplication or whether we did addition first, that our lives would be completely different?
Yes.
Okay, my question to you is, if we have an order to which we did it, what is that order based on?
And that's the part I don't know.
Well, that might be something that we would need to explore to really be able to speak on that. Because my thought process is that there's got to be a reason that there is that order.
And
order must have derived from something logical. It's the PEMDAS is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is what? Power?
No, parentheses, exponents, multiplication, addition, or division, addition, subtraction.
Right. That you do everything in that order, and that's the priority that they take.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So I think what we need to do is just figure out where that came from, because to me it seems like that there's a source to that. And I think that there are some things that are the way they are because they follow a particular implied aspects of universal flow, mm-hmm. or the flow of energy. And that may have derived of that, but we don't know. I guess that we're going to be doing guesswork until we actually find that out.
And that's the thing that's always, you know, caught my attention is, you know, who decided that we do things in that order? And just like what you're saying, it's like, I personally don't know. I'm sure somebody out there somewhere knows. With this little thing that's going around on the internet, again, the last thing is 5 times 0. And if you follow it from left to right, you know, 5 plus 5 plus 5 minus 5 plus 5 plus 5 times 0, then it will come out 0. Which, if you do your whole math along... for technology on how to, you know, put a spaceship on Mars or how to, you know, run a computer or something like that, it coming out 0 is a lot different than if it came out like 15 or 20 or 30. That goes into, well, who decided that multiplication was one of the first things we do? And I agree with you. I think it could be a universal truth that someone said, oh, multiplication first, it works, and they try to division and addition and subtraction first, like, this just doesn't work very well. Can we figure out why that happened, or is it just one of those, it's a given?
Well, I think a mathematical historian would be able to answer that question, and I'm thinking the question probably goes deeper than we think it does. Like, and we talked about this, of course, in sacred geometry,
mm-hmm.
because I think when you're talking about math, it's going to end up talking about sacred geometry.
Yeah,
they talk about the golden mean, which is, they say, well, you know, Pythagoras and all those guys, I don't know who it was, but some mathematician in Greece came up with it, you know, a few centuries BC,
mm-hmm.
and yet they're beginning to think that the pyramids were built at least 30,000 years ago or something like that. It's, yeah. It's they're a lot older than we think they are. They're a lot older than when Egyptians first thought to make little pictures for writing. They're older than that. So if this idea of the golden mean was not necessarily, if the pyramids came before the idea of the golden means, then the pyramid was based on what we, an observation of nature, nature growing in certain patterns, the sunflower and the plants and leaves and following this Fibonacci spiral and all that, then that came from the very mechanics that operate the universe. So I'm thinking that this whole PEMDAS thing, this order that we do math in, followed, had to have followed that. And I'm going to be talking out of the side of my head because I don't really know. I'm not a mathematical historian. But if I were a guessing man, my guess would be that it has probably to do with when you make that particular mathematical operation, how great of an impact it has. Like, for example, if you look at, if you take 5 plus 4 is 9, 5 times 4 is 20. 20 is so much bigger than 9. So how much farther, how much greater does the effect of that change the number, the result of the number? I wonder if that's what it has to do. They said, you know, the thing that's going to have the biggest effect, do that first. And the things that have the smallest effect, just do those last because they're not as significant.
I see. So it's kind of like start from the bigger picture and work your way down. And addition and subtraction would be more of the lower working your way down, and multiplication and division and parentheses and exponents. That would be like the bigger picture.
Yeah, that would be my guess. Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
But I don't know. But I don't know for sure. I'm not a mathematical historian.
Oh, so. Me neither. Me neither. If there's any mathematical historians out there listening and you can shed some light on this, please definitely leave a comment. Yeah. We would definitely be interested. But one of the things I was thinking when you said that, working from a bigger picture to a smaller picture, doing the thing that has the most impact first, to me, when you look at that, when you put that in a graphical example, like a picture, that just looks like a tube torus or a funnel that starts at really wide at the top and just funnels down to a point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the picture I got when you were talking about that.
Yeah, I think that it probably follows that kind of flow.
Cool. Well, that topic's done. I don't know.
But, you know, actually, we're talking about shapes, and we're talking about math, and we're talking about sacred geometry, and it's kind of triggered something that seems to be have you noticed, as of late, it seems like I'm seeing more releases, just discovered, in England, the next crop circle and the next crop circle. Have you seen those pictures?
Like the most recent crop circles and stuff like that?
Yeah, the ones that are coming up just within the last week.
My initial response is very critical, and it's like, oh, that's really good photoshopping. But I don't know if that's actually photoshopping or if that's actually real, because it's very difficult to make that distinction these days.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm looking at the same ones you're thinking of, they're very fractal looking.
Yeah, most of them are. Fractal is another sacred geometry component.
Okay, refresh my memory. Which ones are you looking at, and can you describe them a little bit?
Well, there's so many different ones. I mean, there's ones like the one I saw that looked kind of like a ring and another ring in it, and these circles that were descending as if they were going through the ring, or the circle, as it were.
I had not seen that one.
Okay, I'll have to look for that. For some reason, the crop circles have been really coming up a lot, and I just been very fascinated by the crop circles. I believe that there are a lot of them that are hoaxes, but I do believe that there are a lot of them that are actually genuine.
So you just have to use your discernment to see which one is what you feel is. Go with the ones that you think are real, and disregard the ones you think are not.
I'm really curious as to what they're really about, because there are people who actually go take groups on the crop circles, and the people who stand in the actual general crop circles, genuine crop circles, will say that they feel the energy that is left behind in the crop circle. And then they have actually taken stocks that were made by true hoaxes versus ones that were made that they seem a little too precise to be a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
and the ones that have that kind of energy to them, and they're completely, in one, you basically are crushing and folding over the stalk, and the other one, if you look at the node of the plant,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, the bottom part where the root meets the ground part?
No. The node would be basically where the next, it's like a knuckle. It's a segment.
Oh, okay.
Where one segment stops and the other one starts. Yeah. That's a node of a plant. And what they do is they look at the nodes and basically where they're bent over to form the shapes and the patterns,
mm-hmm.
the node is expanded. And it's expanded in such a way that it leaves behind the integrity of the plant structure. So the plant actually continues to grow and stay viable and alive with this node. There's no pinching as there is when you're walking through, you see a dandelion, you bend it over and it kind of makes that crease and you see the little tear.
Yeah.
This makes almost like a little bubble.
Huh.
So that it's kind of, think of like a bubble joint. like think of the knee. The knee kind of bulges out so that it can bend.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's that same idea.
A ball and socket joint?
Kind of like a ball and socket. It's not a ball and socket, but it's that kind of rounded idea. So, and they say that there's almost an aspect of there being a microwave type heating up and cooling down instantaneously to affect the structure of this plant to keep its integrity yet to be able to manipulate it to fold, in some cases, 90 degrees.
Yeah. Have we ever talked about crop circles?
Only touched on them, I think.
Oh. So... my question to you is, what or who do you think creates crop circles?
Oh, okay. My answers are never in line with the books, unfortunately. I'm reticent to say that they're aliens. I'm just not seeing that. I think there could be a case of them being extraterrestrials. But you know me, I don't think extraterrestrials are that black and white either. I don't think it's that everything's from outer space.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's inner space being a reflection of outer space, then it's trans-dimensional. Something tells me that the crop circles are based on frequencies and patterns that are flowing and coming together due to patterns in our consciousness. As our consciousness raises and our vibrations raises and the grid, the ley lines and the grid that the Earth is... that our consciousness is based on, that's around the Earth, as that shifts and changes, I think it forms these patterns. But why? I don't know. That's what's weird. I don't really know. There's been some theories on that.
So would it be possible to say that there's probably crop circles being created like in lakes and bodies of water, but since they're bodies of water, they're there for just a moment and then they're gone?
You know what it is? Remember how I said the pyramids I thought were three-dimensional resonators?
Mm-hmm.
I think these are resonators of sorts.
Hmm.
It's not that they come from the grid, but they interwork with the grid to help shift and change the grid.
I just got a weird picture.
Let's go. Let's
hear it. With the whole, when you're talking with that, it's kind of like the pyramids are the processor of a computer, and the crop circles are what's on the screen. If you use this whole thing in a computer analogy, then the crop circles are what's constantly being shown on the screen, the pixels that are being lighted and darkened one after the other, depending on what the consciousness of humanity is doing or is expressing or is attracting at that moment.
No, see, I think that I actually think that it's really more the other way.
Oh, really?
I think the crop circles are there to affect this energy field.
Hmm.
Because people say that they stand in them and feel the energy of it, I think they themselves are resonators. They affect the field rather than the field creating the crop circle. I think the crop circle is there to help our field. I think part of it is like, remember you said that you would stare at sacred geometry and you could kind of feel the effects of studying it or drawing it?
Yeah, it was a very intuitive type thing, and it was more of a feeling than an understanding, than a conscious mathematical understanding.
Now let's think of that on a grander scale, because a lot of it employs a lot of sacred geometry.
Oh, yeah.
There's been Metatron's cube, there's been profound spirals, there have been shapes that are kind of, in a lot of them, probably almost every platonic solid has shown up in a crop circle in one way or another, yeah, would be my guess.
And then they have a symbol for the Olympics 2012.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they do.
That showed up in a crop circle?
Well, I think that was Photoshopped, to be honest with you. But
oh, probably. Yeah. Yeah, you can.
I don't know. I'd have to commiserate about that from a little
bit.
Have
you seen the video of one being formed?
I think I saw a video back in the late 90s of how it was done. But crop circles, I have to admit, is not one of the areas I spend a lot of time on, because I have a general curiosity of it, but not enough to be like, ooh, crop circles, what's that all about? Mm-hmm. So the video that I saw was long time ago.
Now, let's take another turn, since we're talking about all these things that we're kind of, I don't know, in the current events of the metaphysical, I suppose. What's your thoughts on the last big CME that came our way?
Oh, the coronal mass expulsion or explosion?
The ejection, yeah.
Ejection. That's the word. I knew it started. You said it E, and I was like, what are words that start with E?
Elephant, eggplant.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. Enough. Oh, man. I don't know. I knew that it happened more after the fact, and then about a couple days afterwards, and I looked it up because that was something I had more of a curiosity into. Basically, what I found that kind of caught my attention was, oh yeah, apparently in the Americas, GPSs didn't work very well for an hour or two. I'm like, really? So this huge explosion from the sun blows by, and the only technological thing that we really have a little bit of difficulty with is people get lost for an hour and then their GPSs work and they're able to find their way. I personally did not notice a lot of difference with me with the energy of it, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, that was what I was asking. And of your thoughts on them. Do you feel like there's any impact? Remember that article we talked about where that person wrote saying that that a scientist said, oh, well, the solar flares affect our consciousness, but they make us more violent. You know, do you remember that whole thing?
It's interesting to do that because I think that happened in when a lot of different planets were happening. If you look at the astrology of what was going on at that time, summer 2012 has been a really kind of interesting astrological mishmash of so many things going together. So,
yeah, how many, 5 planets in retrograde or something like that? Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, and so for me, it's difficult to discern. Okay, is this an effect of astrology, or is this an effect of, you know, the CME, the sun basically going, booyah! Here's a solar storm for you and everything. So, or does it just all come together?
That's a good question.
Yeah, for me, I seem to be affected much more strongly by general astrology type stuff than solar flare type stuff, or at least from my consciously aware, because I probably am. I mean, you know what? That's interesting you bring that up, because a couple days ago I was thinking, you know, our brains are able to be affected very strongly by magnets. Mm-hmm. They have done tests where they can actually put I can't remember if it's low powered or high powered, but they put a magnet over the a part of a subject's brain, and they cannot remember certain things until they remove that magnet. Mm-hmm. And that kind of got me thinking about, along the same lines, I think is where you're going, is if there's all this electromagnetic type energy out there, then how does that affect our brains? Because our brains are literally like electromagnetic waves. And then I thought, well, wait a second. What happens when we get outside of a planet's magnetosphere, you know, magnetic areas, kind of like astronauts A lot of them said that when they were looking back on the Earth, it was very euphoric. I was thinking, well, does a lack of strong magnetic influence on the brain produce a level of euphoria? I don't know. I don't know if that's kind of where you're going or along the same lines of where you're at, but that was something that came up that was kind of interesting.
What's that?
Oh, that goes back to what you were talking about with the crop circles too, because if there's a strong electromagnetic energy that people feel when they go into crop circles, then that would definitely affect their brain.
Be sure.
Yeah.
Well, our whole body system runs on electromagnetics.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, the birds are flying due to electromagnetics. And do you remember in the movie that we did our summation on last episode?
Oh, yeah. The hidden human history. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember how they talked about the magnetic fields changing?
Oh, like a pole shift or something like that?
Well, not just the pole shift. They were talking about that the magnetic field currently is quite kind of wonky right now.
Oh, I think I missed that.
Yeah, they showed a diagram of what the magnetic field currently looks like, and they said, yeah, it's not that pretty little toroid kind of, you know, lines that we see. You know, oh, well, this is the magnetosphere. You know, you learn in science class. They're like, yeah, it's not like that right now. It's a little messed up.
Oh, is that the one where it looks like it's just it looks like a whole bunch of kids just threw finger paints on the wall, and the magnetic lines just going left, right, up, down, forward, backwards?
Yeah, they're kind of scrambly looking. Yeah, okay. It is that one.
I did see that.
I think there's something to that. I think there's something to how our consciousness, I think our consciousness is in, especially three-dimensional, is tied directly into the magnetic sphere. I think it's this: the sun, the consciousness of the sun, and the consciousness of the planet, which we're in, just implicitly tied into.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a give and play going on. I believe that the sun has this divine intelligence about it, and I think that these solar winds aren't just some freak of nature. Oh, it's a hydrogen. It's a big hydrogen generator, and the solar wind is just, you know, another, you know, once again, spin of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
That the kind of lockstep scientists like to say. I think there's something going on. There's an interplay between the solar winds and our consciousness, and I think there's a shift effect. And the example I'm going to give, which is really interesting, I feel the solar flares a lot.
Oh, really?
The bigger they are, the more I feel them. And I've only tracked them, you know, retroactively. It's not like I go, oh, there's one coming, I just better stand by. And it's like, here's the interesting study. I remember reading just recently on the last big one, and it was a really big one. It was like 10 times bigger or something. It was huge. I don't know the exact number, but I'll get those stats. They said the solar wind was there has been a big coronal mass ejection, this huge, huge, huge one, and just kind of, you know, they have the weather watch, the space weather watch,
mm-hmm.
and they said it happened, and this was on the 12th, and they said expect to feel the to reach Earth on the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading this going, no, we may think it's, you know, like driving a car, you get there when you get there, but I'm like, no, consciousness is too quantum.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything happens when it happens right there. And lo and behold, I went into work and I read this in, you know, they said the ejection happened like last that night. And then I went into work the next morning. I worked pretty early. Our server had just went haywire.
Oh, wow.
In such a way that it was like the biggest server crash that I've ever had. I've ever seen in the near 10 years that I've been with the district, one of the biggest server crashes, and we lost data.
Oh, wow.
We actually lost data, and it was, there's no explanation to why it happened, to how the crash happened, but it was huge, and it happened right in line with it. And there were some other little things that were happening too that seemed kind of odd. But the effects of it emotionally and all that other stuff seem to come a little bit later. So I think there's a tie. I think there's a correlation.
And you're talking about the one that happened July 2012?
Yeah, the 14th.
Oh, the 14th.
It happened on the 12th, and we were supposed to get it on the feel it, have it, you know, hit us on the 14th.
Yeah, I just want to make that marker right there because this episode may live on in perpetuity for years and decades and decades, and I can just see somebody
July 12th and through 14th, 2012.
Yeah, 2041 saying July. Well, that was like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Which one is he talking about? Oh, 2012. That makes sense. Now we have a way to get there.
Yeah.
So, I know that my I had family visiting for the 4th of July. That was kind of fun. That was kind of interesting. But that was before that was supposed to happen. And then there was a few weeks where it's just like, huh, yeah. And I guess if I had to say if I was being affected at all, it's more of just a lack of interest in certain things that I was excited about before. But that could be a number of different things. Like, I wanted to go see the new Spider-Man movie. Before it came out, I was like, yeah, let's go. And then it came out and like, I just really am not interested in that anymore. Hmm. It's not that I have no desire to see it. It's just like, I have no desire to see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you start to talk about it, I'm starting to think back over the past, you know, number of weeks. Well, what was happening between the 12th and the 14th? And that's one of the main things that I can think of right there. It's just like, oh, yeah. Pop culture, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with it or if that's just, the heat wave messing with my brain and saying, eh.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now let's talk about that, the heat wave. This is kind of an interesting thing here in the U.S. where we've had the heat wave that's been happening in almost all the states.
Well, not you up in cozy Washington State.
Well, there's another interesting thing. In the contiguous 48 states, the state I live in is probably one of the only states that's not being affected by the heat wave.
Uh-huh.
And yet almost every other state is.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody could say, well, it's geography, blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, really? You're going to give it that simple of an explanation? And then what is up with this heat wave? What is up with the whole thing in Greenland where we had that the big, I don't know if it's permafrost or it's the ice. It's like this big ice field that within 4 days had like a possible 98% melt.
I did not hear about that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of crazy.
Whoa. 98% melt?
Yeah, something like that. That there's a possibility of 98% of it melting. And they say it's cyclical. You know, it melts and comes back, melts and comes back. But they just seem to think it was a big one.
That sounds pretty big. I am not really well-versed in glacier type stuff. And I learned a little bit of it in geology. It wasn't one of those things that stuck. But the idea of a 98% melt is, to me, just like, that's like taking an ice cube and putting a blowtorch on it and like, there you go. Oh, wait, it's down to just a little piece. We'll put this little itty-bitty chip back in the freezer and don't let that go. And that sounds extreme to me, but if you say it's natural, okay then.
No, I'm not saying it's natural. They say that there are natural ebbs and flows of the ice melt, but they're saying that this seems kind of like a big ice melt, bigger than usual. And I guess I'm wondering, do you think that all this stuff is just kind of the way it goes? Do you think it's a rhythm of Earth? Do you think it's just natural, or is there some indication that there is some kind of shifting happening?
That's an interesting question, because if you look at, you'd said, as above, so below, the microcosm is a reflection of the macrocosm. And if you look at us individually, our bodies, what we go through in our cycles from birth to death throughout our whole life cycles, we have some things that if some little microorganism was living inside of us and things started going really crazy, they'd go like, what's going on? It's the end of the, end of the world. I don't know if we can actually know how much of this is natural type stuff or how much of it is, unnatural or unusual. It may be unusual for, the human race in the little time span that we've been on the earth, that we've been alive. But if you go back maybe if you look at a range of time that's like millions of years, maybe not so unusual. Kind of like people in the U.S. most of the time, every fall and winter, it's like, oh, we get a cold or we get a flu or whatever. That's an energy that we've allowed and accepted that happens in the United States. Well, maybe something similar happens with the Earth on a cyclical basis, but we haven't been around long enough to know it. Say, in a year's time, we've only been, the whole human race has been here from, let's say, August 1st to August 3rd. And we've seen a couple cycles happen between then, but we haven't seen the whole year seasonal type thing happen. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, kind of, sort of. I mean, I'm more wondering kind of what your curiosity is what you think might be happening, or what you might intuit might be happening.
See, I really don't know. To be honest,
let me ask if you think that there is some kind of energy shift transpiring.
I think there is energy transitioning, shifting from where it was to where it's going. So in that respect, yes, I do believe that there is an energy shift. My intuition is not sending up warning flags saying, "Ah, it's the end of the world, run for your lives. Wait, we can't run, it's the world, and that's all we're on." It's not sending up flags like that. It's basically, it's like, oh, this is just what happens. So we're moving through it. We're allowing the process to transition through, and we're observing it and, you know, pretty much going with the flow.
Yeah, I think that's, I have a different, slightly different take.
Well, that's me.
No, I understand, and I'm not debunking yours, and I'm not saying that it's invalid. I'm just telling you that that's your take. I have a take as well, but it might be a little.
You
different.
Are too saying it's invalid. You're saying I have a 404 error.
A 404 error. Okay,
yeah. For all you internet savvy people.
Yeah, and for those of you, it's 404. PEMDAS. It's PEMDAS.
So 4 + 4 or 4 × 0 would be 0 + 4 would be 4, or 4 + 4 is 8 × 0 is still 0. So is it 4 or 0?
Is there a D, all of the above, or E, all, none of the above?
Well, actually, since there's no function between the 4, the 0, and the 4, who knows?
Yeah. Watch, you're going to see 404 on your clocks for the next 3 weeks. It is. At 4:04 p.m. and a.m., you're going to wake up at 4:04 a.m. and go, oh. And at 4:04 p.m., you go to get a snack and open your microwave, and it's going to say 4:04. It's going to freak you out, man.
You know it's what's really freak freaky?
You out.
You want to know what's really freaky, David?
Of course. That's our show.
For the past month and a half, whenever I've looked at the time, it's always been in fours. Mm-hmm. It's been like 3:54, 7:24. I always thought that was kind of weird because I normally see things between 5 and 9, like 6:55, 8:37, you know, between the 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And I've been seeing things constantly on the 4s, like 54, 34, 24, 14, 04.
And why do you suppose that is?
I have no idea, but when you mentioned it, I was like, it'll freak you out. I'm like, it hasn't been freaking me out until you said it will, but now I'm thinking
that's
about
what I do. That's what I'm here for. You're very welcome.
But, yeah, I know we have a mutual friend who is really paying a lot of attention to the 11-11 type stuff.
There's a lot of schools of thought on the 11-11 patterns. We talked about the 11-11 pattern back in 11-11-11, right around there, we talked about that.
Yeah.
We actually talked a little bit about the shift then, too, as well.
So this is kind of like an update to that episode, in a way?
Maybe. It's just kind of a checking in on the current events and all the kind of wild stuff that's going on out there. As far as I'm concerned, there is a shift, and it's kind of silly to not think there is, because if we're, I'm going to say consciousness, but I'm going to use this loosely.
Okay.
If our consciousness is raising, and the evidence of that is in our technology and our conceptualization and playing with quantum physics and the discover of the Higgs boson particle and all that other good stuff is growing at an exponential level, what is the glass ceiling?
Oh.
Where eventually do you, is it when it's exponential, how long can you do this and just really keep this level of perception? Now, in combination with that, if our consciousness is implicitly tied in with the Earth consciousness, then how could there not be big Earth changes that kind of correlate with our own changing consciousness?
Kind of like growing pains?
Kind of like growing pains. I think it's a chicken and egg thing. Growing pains, I think, is pretty good. I think it is. It's not a matter of someone's, you know, gender preference of lovers that's causing earthquakes in Haiti. That's just ridiculous. I'm talking more about that we do see things like tsunamis and the heat wave that's going on in the U.S. and these different things that are happening in earthquakes and the animals, the fish that washed up on shore that are, you know, all dead. And all these things that are going on, they're all intercorrelated. And I just don't think that our consciousness can raise and not see the Earth express it as well, because we're not separate from the Earth. We are implicitly tied to the Earth. Mm-hmm. We just don't really understand to what degree.
Oh, yeah. It's like a fish that's always spent his whole life in water thinking about, well, how could I perceive a life outside of water? And it's difficult because my whole reality is surrounded by water. Kind of like our whole reality is we've always been on Earth. We have ideas and stories and thoughts of life and experiences and adventures on different worlds and things of that nature. But as far as I'm aware, no human being has actually been on another planet. You know, if you want to call, you know, we landed on the moon. Sure, okay, we'll do that. But we've never gone outside of this.
Or did we?
Or dum 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 dum. Going back to the conspiracy episodes.
You're right.
But yeah, so you know, it's kind of like what we were talking about. With we're very much connected to the Earth, and I believe that our what I was talking about earlier with our electromagnetic frequencies of our brains and bodies connected to the electromagnetic frequencies of the Earth and everything in that and the Earth's consciousness. Well, what happens if you actually go far enough away from the Earth? What happens to your consciousness? What happens to your brain? Do you totally lose it? Or do you have to adapt to a, let's say, you know, we keep thinking about going to Mars and landing on Mars and having colonies on Mars. Well, that has a different, you know, magnetic signature. What do you think will happen to our brains when that happens? Or would we go crazy? Or would we be at a certain level of consciousness where we would be able to have more control over our emotions and thoughts and consciousness?
Well, see, that's a tricky question, because there's a signature of everything of the Earth, and we are of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Our DNA and our chromosomes and our electromagnetic fields and all this other stuff is Earth-born.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to move to Mars, we would still be sustaining ourselves of that which is of the Earth. If we were growing plants in these hydrospheres and all these other things, then we in biospheres, then those things are of Earth. They originated on Earth, and we're still interdependent on that Earth consciousness, even though we're far away. It's kind of like if you speak English, you move to Tibet, but then again, you either, and you're not capable of learning Tibet, so what you do is you find other people to speak English so that you can communicate.
Hmm.
That's really a rough analogy. Ugh, that was slapped together. Boy, I phoned that one in.
Yeah, you did.
So, you know, sorry. I'll re-analogize at some point.
And did you say analogize?
I think I did.
Analogize.
See, I'm just making words up because. Yeah. <it's
laughs> I analogize for all the pain I've caused in the world. Don't you mean the apologize? Analogous. No, I said analogy.
Yeah, I'm not going to apologize for the analogize.
So. It sounds like some kind of medical thing that they put you, like they put you under. I'm thinking an anesthetic. Oh, anesthesia as opposed to analyze. Okay, Forget it. I've lost it. Yeah. It was there. It was there.
Yeah, it's yeah. That one's really scrambled. You don't want to go down that path.
Now
there's a minotaur in there just waiting to really cut you in two. So.
In a dark cavern, you run into a minotaur. Roll your d20 to see if you what you do. I want to sneeze in his face.
No, I was thinking of more of the maze. You know, in Greek mythology, the minotaur in the maze.
Gotcha.
So anyway, we digress from whatever we digressed from. So. The whole episode is a digression, which is fun. So
it was that whole analogized.
Well, what we're talking about is about consciousness being away from, you know, on a different planet. If you are truly separated from that consciousness, I think it would. Yeah, that's a tough one. I don't really know if we. I think we would drastically change.
I got an idea. What if the crop circles are not only a way of showing the consciousness of the human beings, of us becoming more and more enlightened, but also a geometric form of a program of how we can travel to other different places and stay centered in our consciousness.
I can see that.
In other words, let's say the crop circles are survival equipment, you know, like a bed, some matches, and if you have some basic survival knowledge, if you're in lost in the woods in the United Kingdom or lost in the woods in somewhere in America, or well, South America might be a little more deadly, but you have a basic understanding of, well, I have an idea of what I need to do to survive. I need to have food, shelter. And do I want to find my way out of this place or stay? And maybe the geometries of some of these crop circles are kind of like our flare gun or our pack of matches or our survival guide where we flip to page 382. Oh, how to maintain your consciousness in other dimensions and on other planets.
Maybe they are... allowing us, maybe they're tools that kind of resonate so that our consciousness can start to operate outside of just third dimension, so we can get in fourth and fifth dimensional cognizance and really kind of perceive that level of consciousness.
But doesn't that go kind of against what you said your initial intuitive feelings are, where the crop circles are a representation of kind of where we're at right now? Or did I hear you wrong when you said that?
No, I think I let off of that, but then I kind of shifted into the idea that there are more resonators. And I think it's fine-tuning resonators more than the pyramids. The pyramids were like, let's get you locked into third dimensional so you can have the experience and not get too off course with it. And now it's saying, all right, you've done this third dimensional thing, and it's going to be tough for you to get out of third dimension. You're so locked in. And you can't just jump out of it. What we're going to do is we're going to allow you to, we're going to just change the frequency ever so, you know, like when you're trying to tune into a station with a dial, and you just do that ever so slight fine tuning to try to get that. I think it's that same idea. It's that let's use these frequencies to allow us to kind of start or expanding our perception of consciousness between third and fourth. Because I think really, there is an aspect of us that resides in the higher levels of consciousness, but we just have no awareness of it. And I think to become more awareness of our multidimensional state, I really think that, and I think that the DNA is tied to that. I think DNA, you know, I agree with the channeled entity Kryon in his idea that DNA is multidimensional. And when he says that, I'm like, yeah, well, that completely makes sense. But we're only going to see the 42 rather than the other layers there that are constantly, you know, with probabilities. Every time, you know, we shift between one probability and another, that's interconnected DNA that we share across probabilities. But we share that DNA, but we can't perceive it and see it, but because that aspect of DNA is multidimensional. And that's where I think all these resonances are helping us to kind of grow this way.
Okay, so going with that whole DNA idea, would you say that the quote-unquote junk DNA is just leftover DNA from other probabilities?
I don't think it's junk at all. I think we're using it, but we have no idea how we're using it. That's my belief on it. I believe it is actually constantly working, but we're just not aware that it is working. We're not aware that it is working on a multidimensional level. It's like, remember when we talked about in the last episode, we were talking about the Emerald Tablets?
Yeah.
How they kind of reside in a multidimensional aspect. Mm-hmm. I think our DNA does the same thing. And the junk DNA is, we just can't perceive the part of the DNA that's working because it's working in the quantum field.
Kind of like that part of our DNA that we don't know what it does is kind of like the pyramids of our biology.
Kind of, sort of. I think so. I think there's a degree of truth to that.
Where's the Machu Picchu of our biology? Oh, that's in my spleen. I don't have a spleen.
Oh, you don't have a spleen? That's right. But you know what? The thing is there is aspects of you that does have a spleen. The information about... No, seriously. The information about your spleen is contained in your DNA.
Yes.
Because I think that the DNA... Here's the thing about DNA. The DNA... the DNA that is in your, let's say, the DNA that's in your cerebral cortex and the DNA that's in your large intestine, we see those as two cells and two strands of DNA, but I think those DNA, it's the same DNA. I think that what they do is they resonate at frequencies to form specific types of cells and give specific types of information, but it's really just this DNA as this multidimensional blueprint. And what you're seeing, the manifestation, is not the DNA. It's actually the shadows that are cast. Oh. I think it's the commands that are given. You're seeing the commands from the DNA. But the DNA is all this mapped, you know, because they say if you pull a DNA from any cell, it's going to look the same, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it really is the same DNA, literally. Hmm. But they just appear in different places to us in our body.
Gotcha. And that's why you...
What do you think of that?
That's why you can take a swab of DNA from inside your cheek, and that works just as well as taking a sample of your blood or a piece of hair or something like that.
Right.
When you're talking about that, the whole idea I had was, you know, let's say we are a strand of DNA. Like, you're a strand of DNA and I'm a strand of DNA. And what you're talking about expressing in different areas, I was like, well, if I go to a concert, that has a rock concert or something like that, then I'm expressing myself in a higher or at least a different type of energy frequency than when I'm, let's say, in a coffee shop. Let's say the rock concert would be more like middle of someone's brain and the coffee shop would be in someone's, I don't know, pinky finger. And so from what I got from that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like we are the same regardless of where we're at. We're just expressing ourselves in relation to the function of where we're at. Kind of like at a rock concert, you know, you hoot, you holler, you scream, you lose your voice. If they play a really good song, you put your lighters up. But if you do that in a coffee house, you'll probably be asked to leave very quickly.
Yeah, I could see that as an analogy. I think the common link there is where are you? And so the coffee shop being analogous to the pinky and the rock concert being analogous to the brain. But I think also the DNA actually doesn't just share locations in different parts of your body. It also shares locations through different parts of your time. When I said that you have a spleen still, it's because your DNA still knows your spleen from when you had it.
Yeah.
Your DNA still resides in that time and space when you had that spleen. You see? So DNA crosses time and it crosses space. It's the same DNA giving different instructions all the time to different aspects of your body and to different aspects of your temporal existence.
Then that would be sort of how law of attraction works when you start changing the way you think and feel about certain things, then you're starting to turn off certain switches in one part of DNA and bring up other switches in the other DNA, since it's all there and it's all multidimensional.
Absolutely. Your DNA in your presence gives the instructions to your future self of how to be. It also gives instructions to your past self how to be, so that it could set itself up for the present.
Gotcha. That's actually pretty cool and pretty trippy.
Oh, thank you. It is a trippy one. I've been trying to chew on the whole DNA thing for a while, and I don't know what got us on it, but... And I think a better understanding of our DNA is going to occur when we have a better perception of how multidimensional we are, which I think these crop circles and the shift is preparing us for multidimensional perception. Quantum computing is something they're constantly talking about, and oh, I think that we'll have a... And the Higgs boson, big clue there.
Oh, that was amazing, because they verified that at, I think, a Sigma 5 level. I was like, what's a Sigma 5? What does that mean? From what I read, is the difference between the level of quality of a Sigma 4 and a Sigma 5 is immense.
What does that mean?
Basically, they said, we have discovered the Higgs boson at a confidence level of Sigma 5.
Oh, I see. It's how certain they are of its existence.
Yeah, and the difference...
Or validation and verifiable.
Exactly. And the difference between a Sigma 5, that's like top... That's like big, big, huge, huge, huge. That's like saying, we have a fairly strong confidence that gravity exists. No kidding, dude. Look.
Well, you know what? I think it's bigger than that, Donald. Do you remember that article about the Higgs boson where they were saying, are you sure you didn't find it because you made it, you put it there?
Oh, yeah.
Just by
yeah.
looking for it?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's even bigger.
I think that's, yeah, I think that's pretty big, too, because from what I understand, the Higgs boson is more of a mathematical probability, more so than an actual physical particle.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes right in with what we've been talking about, is Higgs came up, I think, back in the 50s, he came up with this mathematical proposal that, oh, this particle has to hold mass together, and therefore we just have to find a way to prove that this mathematical stuff right here is actual reality. And that kind of goes in with what I was talking about earlier with math. It's just kind of like, well, depending on how you do math can create your reality.
Well, and I want to kind of applaud your approach with the mathematics there. And I think that really kind of wraps up all the stuff we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
I think in order to get to the shift that we're seeing all these things, we're seeing the crop circles and all this other stuff, we're seeing stuff come from the sun, we're shifting in consciousness. The Higgs boson particle and the evidence that maybe we actually found it because we created the probability of finding it is the same idea as what you're saying, which is basically mathematics works by an order, but maybe we just created how well it works because we created the order it worked in. If we created a different order, it would be a different thing. But the bottom line is that not how different would it be or what would it be like if we created something different, but that our world is the way it is because of what we decided as the mathematical order.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nice. Exactly. Nice. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. I think that that's a good summation of this really fun and interesting ride of an episode.
Yeah. And you know what? I think I want to probably have a science episode further down the line where we just go, we look more into this spiritual ideas of scientific discovery and stuff like the Higgs boson and solar flares and CMEs and 98% melt on green layers. Wow, that just blows my mind.
Well, you know, and I'm going to say this. This is kind of my little sum up of everything. I think that science is such a huge part in what we've defined our reality to be that in order to really take the next step in our consciousness and our raising of our consciousness and our vibration and our evolution, science has got to get on board. Because science is so about, you know, proof, 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 and then it exists. I think once science starts to discover that it's actually creating its own proof and that we are actually creating our own reality, when science embraces that, then we get to the next level. And I think those are the steps that we're taking from what we're seeing occurring in the world today.
Exactly. Oh, that's going to be cool times too.
Yeah.
So for Take the Red Pill, David and I would like to thank you for listening. And if this is your first time listening, we hope we've stretched your mind a little bit. And if you're a longtime listener, we'd like to thank you for your patronage.
And if you want to get more information, we've posted show notes. We always post show notes to all these little things that we've referred to on our website, which is TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. You can also listen to our episodes there. You can listen to them on iTunes via Take the Red Pill search on podcasts. And you can check us out on TTRP Podcast on Facebook. And you can also listen to the episodes there and get little other links to interesting things that we're discussing.
Awesome. For Take the Red Pill, my name is Donald Dalton, wishing your DNA to be an enlightening experience.
And I'm David Deere. Keep your eye out on what's going on around you and flow with it.